Blog Talk Radio.
The Visionary Hotspot. Talk radio with the consciousness of women, for women, by women. A radio show bridging the gap among women desiring their purpose with the world's greatest minds, achievers, and believers of women's progress. The Visionary Hotspot. Inspiring, encouraging, enlightening, and empowering women to live life as our greatest self. I am you, you are me, and we are visionary women.
Hello, hello, and welcome everyone to the Visionary Hotspot Talk Radio. And today we are here with Dr. Adrienne Udeem. How are you, doctor?
Hi there, how are you?
I am doing wonderful. I am so glad to have you here because, everyone, we are talking about are fat people left out of society. And this conversation is important because just going up and down with my weight and having children, et cetera, I noticed that there was a huge discrepancy with the accommodations that one would call average size people have compared to those who may be overweight or morbidly obese don't have. So, Dr. Adrienne Udeem, jump right in on this conversation and let me know, why is this conversation so important for us to have?
You know, I just want to bring up a point just about your intro, because average weight right now is overweight and obese. 67%
wow.
of our population, 67% of Americans are either overweight or obese. So, in fact, we are accommodating a minority of the population, and we are not accommodating a majority of the population that is over two-thirds, again, that are overweight or obese. So it is a very important discussion to have because it is affecting so many people in the United States.
Wow. Wow. I wonder, how did we get to this place where weight is even a topic of conversation? Because, you know, it's so interesting when we think in terms of, let's look at the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. Americans were not overweight people. You know what I'm saying? They literally were not overweight people, and they were not overweight with less of the amenities that we have access to today. So what has happened?
You know, it's such a difficult question to answer as to why this has become such a major problem, not just in the United States, but in the entire world. But, you know, it started kind of early 80s when the CDC began to accumulate statistics on number of obese people in the United States. And at that time, the numbers were about 10%. But now we are in a situation where yearly it has increased. It has increased to where we are right now. Why it's happening,
wow.
There's a couple of reasons. First of all, lives have gotten busier. So we are spending more time in the workplace, more 9-to-5 jobs, more sedentary at the desk. As a result of not being home, we don't have time to cook, more takeout, more eating out. The average number of calories in a meal outside of the home is about 1,150. That is close to what we should be consuming an entire day. But, you know, it's not just about the calories in and the calories out. We now know that there are environmental factors like BPA in our environment that we think affect our genes and the way we transmit our genetics or our genes to our children. So there's a lot of factors at play as to why we are heavier. But the fact remains that this is where we're at right now, and we need to have the conversation because weight bias exists, and it is pervasive in every aspect of our lives, from schooling and education to the workplace to socialization to healthcare. It really is it really is present in every aspect of our lives, and we have to have the conversation in order to be cognizant and to hopefully change the bias that's occurring.
Wow. You know, that's crazy, because even when we think in terms of the way we interact with heavier people, you know, I swear, I find that people seem to shun them, kind of move away from them, or even when they're eating out in public, the view of it, it's almost like you're literally watching people watch someone that they are in amazement with. And I'm wondering, why is this phenomena of watching or mistreating or interacting differently with heavier set people, why is it that we react like that?
Well, you know, the watching issue is a really good point, because think about it. Obesity is the only disease, and the American Medical Association and the medical profession does consider this as a disease. It's the only disease that people are wearing on the outside. If an individual has diabetes, right, and the diabetes may be caused by weight gain too, by the way, but if they have diabetes, we can't glance over at the table next to us and say, oh, my God, she has diabetes. But we can't glance over across the table and say, oh, my God, she's obese. And so it does result, I think, in part of this bias, because people can be called out by their disease just by being looked at. So it does contribute to the bias. As to why we're doing it, it's funny. There are studies that show that children as young as 3 years old start to attribute negative characteristics to people who are obese. So when researchers have gone and talked to three-year-olds, they have found that children of that age will characterize obese people as ugly, lazy, stupid, and mean. These are words coming out of a three-year-old's mouth just by looking at an individual that is obese. So yes, people are enabling themselves to do this, and it's happening at such a young age, as young as 3 years old.
Wow. You know, I'm wondering if it has a lot to do with us as a society, because, you know, we don't realize that we have been fed glamour, not beauty. All this time, we have confused the two. So we have lived in a place in a space where we admire what we thought was beautiful people, when in actuality, the media sells us glamour. And therefore, our children are inundated with this idea of what beautiful really looks like, what that sounds like, what that feels like, and the way it should present itself. So really, is it more so a problem that we have with overweight people, or is it shame on us because we have bought into the game?
You know, it absolutely is what we perceive as valuable in society, and how that message gets transmitted to our children at such a young age, who can have these opinions to objectify or characterize obese people in this way. It is a societal phenomenon. I mean, I'll just give you an analogy. There are countries in which elderly people, the grandparents, the great-grandparents, are brought into the home and are made the center of the home. They are the wise ones. They are the ones that we look up to, and they are the center. In our society, in general, you know, everyone's different. Every family is different. But in general, in our society, we marginalize our elderly people. They're no longer useful to us. They no longer have anything to say that is of great value. They don't no longer participate the way they would have if they were in their 50s, for example. This is a societal phenomena. It does not occur in other societies. And so I think the analogy can be drawn to obese people as well. We marginalize.
Right.
It's a societal problem because, yes, we do put emphasis on skinny and lean, and we identify beauty with that type. And so clearly this is not that type. And so we shun them.
Right. Wow.
But, you
know
the issue is... Go ahead. No, well, as I was going to say, the issue that just...
No, go ahead, Adrian. You're my guest. You go ahead and tell me your expert opinion. I'm listening.
Sorry, our wires are crossing. But what I was going to say is that the issue is not just kind of what we see as a society and shunning people because of how they look, but this bias is impacting obese individuals in a very profound and tangible way. For example, we know that obese individuals are less likely to get enrolled or accepted to colleges than their lean counterparts,
wow,
even when they're just as qualified when a photo is attached. We know that obese individuals are less likely to be hired as compared their lean individuals, even if they have the same requirements met, even if they are just as qualified. And the statistic that was published in the Journal of Business and Psychology several years ago that said that a millennial woman that's born between mid-80s and 90s who is obese will earn an average of $956 billion less, you know, collectively, than their lean counterparts. I mean, that is tremendous. That a bias can play so strongly in the ability to have access to education and the ability to have access to a job. But, you know, it doesn't stop there. The bias is pervasive in the healthcare system. Individuals who are obese, they report that they feel that they have been shamed or stigmatized by healthcare workers or healthcare professionals in that setting. They are less likely to reach out to medical care or for medical care, and they are treated differently. And these are all documented in research. So it is a problem that is a socialization problem, but it is pervasive in every aspect, you know, including wages, jobs, education, healthcare, among others.
Oh, my goodness. And, you know, I could really see that because if you have a real self-esteem issue with your body mass, and then someone is on top of that, placing even more pressure on you, that can really damage the way you interact with people. And, you know, it's not simply just the way we treat each other because of their weight. It is the expectation that we all should look, behave, and act the same, almost as robotic. There's a robotic entity to where we feel or see or deem that everyone in society should look, see, act, and behave the same. Inadvertently, when we really think about it, that's what we're requesting when we want everyone who's the same height to be the same weight. And that makes no logical sense. Because even with my dog, I mean, we're just going to use my 75-pound boxer. My dog is a very tall dog, but again, she's 75 pounds, and this dog is very lean. Now, if I took another dog and compared her to that dog of a different breed, I can guarantee you that dog looks very overweight because the body mass is not built the same. So why is it that we expect everyone to look, act, and behave and sound and present itself the same because of our height? And we don't take in these other factors, especially DNA. I mean, we know just with our genetics and, you know, our DNA, that changes also the way our body will present itself. Some people have bigger booties. Some people might have bigger breasts. Some people have a flat. Some people I know had a baby yesterday and don't look like they've ever had a baby one day in their life. So what's up with that?
You know, it's just what it comes down to is that this is a form of discrimination. It's a form of discrimination, and in fact, it has been cited by MIDAS as the fourth most prevalent form of discrimination in the United States. There has been about a 50% increase in size discrimination over the last decade. This is data comparing 1996 to 2006, so Just among that time frame, there was a 50% increase. And so it is a form of discrimination. You know, as a physician that treats obesity from a health perspective, I have an interest in helping people reduce their weight and get them healthier, because I know that excess weight
right.
is associated with heart disease and cancer and many other health problems. But, you know, I have an interest in getting my diabetics to improve their sugar control and getting my patients
yes.
with high blood pressure better control their blood pressure as well. There shouldn't be a bias there. There shouldn't be a discrimination there. It should be left to the individual and the people that can help them to get them back to health without the stigmata of what it means to be obese. But certainly, we are not there.
Wow. And it's almost as though people actually think that these people forgot they were fat. I mean, really, think in terms of when you go to buy an airplane ticket, literally, heavier set people are forced to buy two. When you think in terms of going shopping, Dolce & Gabbana, and, you know, they do not cater to people of a certain weight. Even when we think in terms of heavier set clothing, it's not even as appealing when you put them on compared to slimmer clothes. So what about those factors?
You know, I think this is all bound to change. This aspect of it, the amenities or the accommodation is bound to change because, as I said, the majority of the population is now overweight and obese. And so as the majority, those people who are in positions of influence,
uh-huh.
I hope and I expect will help facilitate these changes because,
yeah.
Again, it's not a minority of the population. It's a majority. And so they are going to need access to bigger clothes, to bigger seats, to whatever it is that they need access to. And so I can't imagine that over time this provision can't or won't be made.
Right, right. That makes so much sense because we all need it, irregardless of how we think. Everyone, hold on to your seats because we will be right back after this commercial break as we talk about are fat people left out of society with Dr. Adrian Udine.
Join us at thevisionarywoman.com, a media network of women for women by women. Watch our hosts of insightful video exchange interviews. Listen to the Visionary Hotspot Talk Radio to empower your evenings and read fascinating articles of perseverance and inspiration, all with you in mind. Visit thevisionarywoman.com and follow us on our social media pages, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Hey, everyone. We are back, and we're talking about are fat people left out of society? Dr. Adrian Udine, tell us, what are some of the unique causes of overweight or obesity, et cetera?
So talked about this a little bit at the beginning, and we talked about some of the lifestyle factors that have contributed
mm-hmm.
to weight gain or obesity in the United States, or really, I should say, across the world. We talked about
wow.
Changes in work and the work environment, changes in food, how we consume it, where we consume it, the fact that eating out has become so much more prevalent, and the calories per meal at a restaurant, not just fast food. I mean, we all know that fast food is not good for us, but even a nice sit-down restaurant will serve you a beautiful piece of fish in a
mm-hmm.
butter sauce. So even
right.
good restaurants are going to give you tasty food that they have made with salt, sugar, and fat, which is going to add on the calories. But, you know, there are all other factors at play. We know that there are certain medications, for example. So antidepressants is a big category of medication that causes weight gain. And some of these drugs cause tremendous amount of rapid weight gain, like 10 to 20 pounds over the course of 3 to 6 months. I mean, really accelerated weight gain. So medications can play a role, and antidepressants aren't the only kind. Seizure medication, antipsychotics, certain blood pressure medications. I mean, there are quite a few that can do that. There are certain medical conditions that are associated with obesity or that make weight gain more likely. There are environmental factors. We talked a little bit about BPA. There's been data to show that women who are smokers actually change the way their genes are passed on to their child to make the likelihood of that child to become obese much more. What a mom eats, actually, while she is pregnant appears to imprint on those genes and how it's passed down to the child, making that child more likely to enjoy certain types of foods as well as to be obese. We know that gut bacteria, so everybody knows we have bacteria in our intestines. We need these bacteria in order to live. They help us with many things, including how we digest food. There has been a lot of data recently that is still, you know, being uncovered that it correlates changes in gut bacteria to obesity and, in fact, early antibiotic use. So children who have required lots of antibiotics early in their development, and the effect that had on their gut bacteria appears to make them more likely to gain weight than those that were not exposed to antibiotics at a young age. So, I mean, there's a really long list of alternative or alternate factors that contribute to this problem. And a lot more that are still being uncovered.
Wow.
You know, and I agree with that because, you know, it's interesting when you were talking, I was sitting here thinking to myself, I remember when my son, my youngest child, was first born, he had a lot of gastro problems to the point where he had to see a gastrologist, a pediatric Vanderbilt gastrologist. And one thing I noticed that when he started to feel better, he ate a lot. And he didn't just eat like, you know, your average one-year-old. He would eat to the point where you would have to force him to stop eating because you could tell that he was overeating. And he was eating as though he had just eaten for the first time, this kid. And he still does that to where we have to monitor what he eats and how much of it that he eats. So when do we start taking back the responsibility of our own health and saying, okay, listen, yeah, being overweight is one thing, but living with for real diseases that are not going away, that's going to be remedied forever, that's not an option either. Anything that can take away your sight, anything that can take away your toes, anything that can stop your heart, you know, those are the factors that should be driven home when we're talking about obesity and being overweight. So how do we start encouraging people to take back their own health?
Yeah, I mean, this is also such a great question and such a difficult issue, particularly with children, right? Because you want to enforce or you want to educate them to make the right decisions and to make the right choices. But there's a fine line because if you badger them too much, then you put them at risk for having a stigmatization from their parents. Because of the way we frame excess weight or obesity in the society, our children have picked up on that. And so if you have a conversation with your child about, you know, restricting or limiting junk food, you know, you have to be careful that you don't impart that stigma or bias or trigger something that may be in their own mind in regards to stigma and bias. But at the same time, if you don't intervene, you're right. If you don't intervene, these children will grow up to have disease, and they will have potentially a shorter lifespan as a result. So it is very important to frame this issue in a manner of health and not a manner or not an issue of cosmetics. It needs to be framed
right.
in a perspective of health. And personal or on an individual's level, the individual, I think, also has to frame this in a perspective of health, because when an obese person or when somebody is overweight starts to frame this issue in a bias towards themselves, they're less
mm-hmm.
likely to be successful in achieving weight loss, and they're more likely to sabotage themselves because
wow.
of their own stigma or their own bias that comes into play.
I'm wondering, Adrienne, does a lot of the food that we eat, does that play a major part too? You know, some time ago last year, I had the amazing Tanya Amen on my show, and she was talking about a lot of the chemical makeups that are in the food, and when we add that to our diet, you know, that too plays a part in how much we eat and can we become addicted to food, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, it used to be that sugar came in cubes. So you knew exactly how much of an intake you were taking in. Now people just dump sugar in their food, and we have no clue on what it is that we're giving to ourselves because there's no real measurement to it. So how do we really start looking at what we ingest?
You know, I think this is a graded response or a graded approach.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we can talk about things like you know, genetically modified food and hormones and antibiotics in food and how that plays a role. But why don't we start with the simple stuff? Why don't we start with not eating out? Why don't we start with not snacking
yes.
and not snacking on calorie dense foods? I mean, we all know that chips and caloric drinks and soda and alcohol and juice are bad. We know that.
Right.
So why don't we start with eliminating those things that are obvious and eliminating those things from our diet? We know that, you know, portions matter. So when we
yes.
go to a restaurant and we order a meal, the portions of that pasta that come out are maybe two or three cups. A serving size of pasta is one cup. So considering things like reducing your portion to eating half of what's on your plate, packaging half and putting it away. You know, these are obvious things that we can do that really make a huge difference. What about packing your lunch and, you know, not going out to eat during the workday? It takes time, but it takes a little bit of time. And the impact is huge because, again, remember, the average meal at a restaurant is 1,150 calories. So before we talk about, you know, the harder issues to tackle, like our food source, let's talk about the easy things that we can do that we can control and will have an impact, a measurable impact.
Yes. Yes, I absolutely agree with you. Dr. Adrienne Eugene, when everyone wants to contact you, we need to get our lives fit. We need to get our bodies in order. We need to lose the weight, and we need to feel great. How do we reach you?
Well, I first want to say thank you for having me. This is such a great topic, and I'm so pleased that it was important enough to you to discuss it. I can be reached.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love it. I love what you're doing. I can be reached via the website www.dradrienneudeem.com. There's an email link there that you can ask us questions, and we're happy to get back to you. We're also on social media, Instagram at Dr. Adrienne Eugene, Twitter at DRA Eugene, and any way that you can reach us, we'd be happy to see you.
Wonderful. Oh, my goodness. Everyone, listen, we are so glad to have you here with us today. I'm glad you joined us. We learned so much. And everyone, remember, we are here every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. Every single Thursday, 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. Remember, you can always call in at 347-989-8500. 1-800-273-8664. Talk with you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.